My first guest in this edition is Arizona Congressman Jod Shadegg, a Republican representing his state's 3rd Congressional District, and he's a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. That committee is digging in even more on its work towards an energy bill known as cap and trade. Right now it's in the markup stage, and we want to talk about that and how this debate is playing out. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Glad to be with you.
Explain real quickly for our listeners what the markup process means and what you guys are debating this week.
Well, what it means in terms of legislative terminology is that a bill has been introduced, in this case by the Chairman Henry Waxman and Ed Markey of Massachusetts, proposing what's called a cap-and-trade system. Hearings have been held on the topic of cap-and-trade for some time now, and now we are in the process of offering amendments line by line to the language of the bill. With regard to what we're talking about here, I suppose the best thing you could say is that we're talking about imposing a massive new cost on the currently free ability of businesses in America to emit carbon dioxide. Maybe that'll put a little finer point on it. To stop what is believed to be a major contributor to greenhouse global warming, the goal of this legislation is to limit carbon dioxide emissions. Therefore, to limit them, they're going to put a price on them, that is, make it expensive, hopefully, from the proponents of the bill's perspective, very expensive, to continue to do what companies do now, which is emit carbon dioxide, for example, when they produce electricity or when they produce steel or when they produce cement. And the belief is that if we put a very steep price on emitting carbon dioxide here in the United States, we'll emit less of it and we will not cause global warming.
Congressman, we've talked to certain experts who say that climate change isn't even caused by carbon dioxide levels. So what scientific proof is behind this legislation to drive up costs for energy producers and ultimately the public?
Well, I think that's the great question that everyone should be asking, and I'd urge people to watch these hearings. Quite frankly, I don't think there is proof. There is political consensus that man-made greenhouse gases are causing global warming, but I don't think there is scientific agreement on that point. Interestingly, greenhouse gases comprise only 2% of the total atmosphere, so 2% of the total atmosphere. Only 3.62% of that 2% is carbon dioxide, and only 3.4% of that carbon dioxide is caused by human activity. Most of it is caused by other things like volcanoes, forest fires, the breathing of, for example, cows, or other types of emissions. So remember, we started out with 2%, then we did 3.62% of that 2%, and then we did just 3.4% of the 3.62% of the 2%. So it is this tiny, 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 tiny fraction, and somehow we believe that if we can reduce emissions within that tiny fraction, it will change whether or not the globe warms.
In terms of the plan here, what does the majority admit will take place in terms of the higher costs for the firms as well as the public, and what do they dispute in terms of the Republican analysis of this?
Well, that's a great question. They admit, for example, that there will be job losses. They admit that there will be companies that will shut. They admit that energy prices will go up. They don't admit that they will go up to the degree, for example, that other experts project. They don't, for example, acknowledge that there'll be a reduction in the gross domestic product of our nation of something like $9.6 trillion. They don't admit that, as certain studies have shown, it will destroy somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 million jobs. They don't admit that it will raise electricity rates by 90% or gasoline prices by 74% or residential natural gas prices by 55%. But they acknowledge that some of those things will happen. They also admit that there will be damages to some industries here in the United States, like coal or steel or cement or others. And they say that we'll just take government money and make those industries whole.
What are you hearing from organized labor? You mentioned steel, you mentioned coal. Those are obviously two areas where organized labor is quite active. How are they falling on this issue?
Well, organized labor, where they have members whose votes have been needed for this bill, For example, organized labor in the steel industry in Pennsylvania has been negotiating for favorable treatment of the steel industry, for example, and for other industries that could be affected if we lose even more steel production jobs here in the United States. And since they are a constituency of the majority, they've been getting those concessions. And I think, quite frankly, they are going along because of the concessions they've gotten and with the hope that it won't have far-ranging effects. The problem with that is it doesn't help the guy who actually loses his or her job. It doesn't help the person whose electric bill actually goes up, and goes up rather dramatically. So I guess the answer would be deals have been cut with unions trade by trade. Whether or not those deals adequately protect the individual consumer, or whether consumers are left out of this discussion, is one of the great debates that's going on here in the committee.
Now, Congressman, clearly it's the objective here, it seems anyway, of the majority to accelerate the transition to renewable sources of energy. And I know the Republicans endorse an all of the above strategy on this. What's their sense? Because a lot of people don't necessarily believe that these renewables, A, can be productive enough in the next 10 years, which is basically the Obama timeline here, or be able to produce the amount of energy that the fossil fuels currently do. So how do they expect this transition to go? And how do you expect this transition to go?
Well, I think it's really a pretty fair comparison to other places where the government has tried to manage the economy and step in kind of with a very heavy hand. The government has tried to manage the automobile industry, specifying retirement plans and specifying mileage standards, and that's, you know, kind of micromanaging the industry, and we've seen that the industry has gone bankrupt. The government has, to some degree, tried to regulate and encourage lending, home lending, home ownership lending, in sectors of the economy where those couldn't be supported, and again, we've seen that in some places the market takes advantages of government pressure to make loans where loans probably ought not to be made, and you have negative consequences. Quite frankly, I think you said it quite right. Most Americans and the vast majority of Republicans would agree that we need to be moving toward renewable fuels, and we can. But there are reasonable time limits set on how quickly we can do that. Interestingly, the first amendment that we debated today, and we're now in 5 hours of amendments, and I believe only on the second, or maybe we've just now shifted to the third amendment, that was a debate over a massive taxpayer-funded and energy consumer-funded slush fund to pay to reward certain government-selected winners in the renewable energy fight. Rather than letting the marketplace decide which renewable energies are economically viable and reward them with capital to move forward quickly, and let the marketplace decide which renewable energies are less viable, the First Amendment was a massive new slush fund, if you will, to provide capital to politically selected, that is, partisan government-selected winners and losers in the renewable energy field. I don't think that's going to get us there quickly. I don't think it bodes well for the economy, but that's what the proponents of the bill wanted to do as their First Amendment.
We're talking with Arizona Congressman John Shattuck, about 2 minutes to go here. And Congressman, get a little more specific with our listeners, if you can, about the Republican strategy. And do you believe, as some have suggested, that even despite the Democratic majorities here, that this is not a slam dunk?
Well, I don't think it's a slam dunk in the full Congress, that is, House and Senate combined, because the average American has no clue what the words cap and trade mean. Cap and trade, I think, are largely confusing terms. They actually refer to the government setting a cap on the total amount of carbon dioxide which may be emitted going into the future, and by the way, ratcheting that cap down over time. And then trade means that if you give up the ghost and no longer want to use the carbon permits you've bought, you can sell them to somebody else. Or if your company becomes efficient and no longer needs the carbon permits you've bought, you can sell them to someone else. But I don't think Americans, although I don't think they understand those terms, Joe Sixpack, you know, the guy that drives the UPS truck that comes to my house, I don't think has any clue of what is involved in this legislation. I don't think they, for example, have any idea that even the proponents of the bill acknowledge it will cost Americans job, and it will be a massive increase on their energy costs, and for that matter, massive government involvement in the economy. I think once Americans discover that, they'll put pressure on Congress to say, whoa, wait a minute, what are you doing this for? And that then is the next great question. What are we doing this for? And as near as you can tell, it will not result in a reduction in the increase of global temperatures by a half a degree in 100 years. So if you put it up to a kind of a cost-benefit analysis, it looks pretty crazy, and I don't think it's a slam dunk, and I think people who are worried about their electric prices or their gasoline prices or the cost, quite frankly, of everything they buy, from a new car to a ham sandwich, will go up as a result of this legislation. I think they ought to be looking at it and talking to their member of Congress.
Congressman, unfortunately, our time is up. Always great to have you with us, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Arizona Congressman John Shattuck represents his state's 3rd Congressional District, member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. This is Dateline Washington.